Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Big Show. I'm Jeff Gamet. I am your interim host sitting in for Ewan Rankin. You can tell the difference between us because first, I have the ham-fisted American accent, and I'm shorter, and I don't look as good. Ewan, we do miss
Much
you.
Much shorter.
Much shorter, yes.
Yep. I mean, that's because Ewan is a giant, that's why.
That's true. And Ewan and I have been in the same place at the same time more than once. So we do have actual proof that we are not, in fact, the same person. Anyhow.
It's all fake. It was all done in like Photoshop, right?
That's right. I am a Ewan deep fake.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yeah, I'm just imagining how that would play out in real life, and I am so sorry, Ewan. I am so sorry. Anyhow, I'm so excited because this is our second to last show of the year. Next
it's
week,
the last regular show of the year, actually.
Yes, because next week, we'll be doing our Christmas quiz. And I am very much looking forward to that, as should everyone else also. Based on past performance, as I recall, you should always bet against me on the Christmas quiz.
I can tell you one thing. I've almost completed the quiz already. Wow, it's been a weird year. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
And how many of the answers, the correct answer is Elon Musk?
Not very many because I took him out. It was to be like, and I'm not dissing him. It was really hard to have any question about anything that you did, because whatever you did changed 5 minutes later.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Like, okay, I can't ask you about Twitter blue check marks or whatever because it's constantly changing.
Right, and it's supposed to change again tomorrow as we record. So, who knows?
Yeah, exactly.
So Patrice, the amount of work that you put in to making the Big Show and Mac Show Christmas quizzes come together, I don't think people get how much work that really is. So, I'm just calling that out because holy crap, you put so much work into that.
It's been a couple of hours, but the good thing is because I did it last year, one, I had a quiz already that I can like orient myself after and see, okay, what kind of question did I ask last year? And the other thing is I kept all my Big Show notes, like all the stories that I picked out, even if I didn't talk about them on the show. So I have literally for the entire year, I have just a massive amount of documents. They can just go in and say, okay, what were the stories? That's why I'm saying, I was like, wow, like this nothing. there's very little big tech news that happened. It's a lot of weird little thing. So yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I can tell you one thing. I think it's gonna be hard. This year is gonna be hard, the quiz.
I won't be able to tell the difference because they are all hard for me.
Have the memory of a goldfish, it'll be terrible.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Anyhow, Patrice, how are you?
I'm doing good. I had the day off because we have one of those infamous public holidays here. You know, the US doesn't even know what that is. Like, what are holidays?
No, we don't.
I mean, maybe Thanksgiving. Like, it's the only one. No, it's been good. Like Germany doesn't have it, so a big chunk of my team was working today, or my teams, I should say. But no, I took the day off, watched some Christmas movies with friends, and
nice.
Just had fun. It was a beautiful day too. Like it was cold, but it was like sunny and everything. So I'm good.
Nice.
Looking forward to next week. I will have 3 quizzes next week. I have one at work that I'm organizing, like a pub quiz, and then the 2 Christmas quizzes for the Big Show and the Big Show.
Wow.
Expect snow soon, says my phone.
Oh.
That'll be on the quiz next week. Did Ian expect snow in the coming week?
Oh, he did.
Yeah. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm dealing with a curious cat at the moment. Ada, our foster kitty, is trying to join the show.
Let her.
Or he she. Is welcome.
Yeah, let her. Like, I mean, she knows about as much about what's going on as we do, so it's all good.
I'm doing fine. The wife and I spent a long weekend up in Quincy, California, which is up kind of up in the Sierra Nevada foothills, you know, Tahoe-ish area.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a great experience. It's normally about a 5-hour drive. It took us 9.5 hours to get home on Monday. There's this thing called snow.
Wow.
And when it snows, you have to drive really slow and put chains on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing as fun as laying on the side of Interstate 80 at night with semis whizzing by, laying on your back, putting chains on. It's just so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel your pain. Having done that on I-70, up near the Eisenhower Tunnel, so just about Timberline. So what is that, about 12,000 feet?
Wow, 12,000.
It's and the wind is blowing and it's snowing and it's just cold.
And it's all the snow on the side of the road is slush. We put on chains basically at Donner Pass, just before Donner Pass, and it was cold and windy and slushy, and I had to drive, you know, with full concentration.
I would have just turned around and be like, no. I'm just staying here.
I would have, but we had to be back. Teresa had a charity event the next day that we had to get back for. So otherwise, I never would have done it.
Well, I'm glad you made it back safe, and presumably still have all of your fingers and toes.
Most of them, frostbite. Yeah, most of them. Yeah, most
excellent.
Of them.
Excellent.
He has a couple extra now.
Yeah. Well, you know, you drive past a nuclear power plant, come away with an extra finger, extra toe. It's just how it goes.
I did drive by Lawrence Livermore, so it's possible.
Yeah. Ian, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Even better now that AWS has finally reset my password for me and got me back into account that got hacked. Like, it's only taken him a week.
Wow.
Yikes.
A week?
A week. It was last week I was emailing them going, how comes I got an email this morning that says someone's changed the password on my AWS account? Oh.
That's that's not
and
a good
I had thing. I had to go and dig through my thing, find actual... This is my ID. The email address doesn't match anymore. This is what's happened. I had to log and create a new account to get to talk to them, to work it out, and then I had to reset it off. It's been more faff than it was necessary, but I got the email today, and I've just been able to log in. So things are better.
Good.
And I can make sure no one's trying to run me up a massive bill, which is what I was concerned about. So that's all good. What else do I know? Been a nice week here. I've a couple of days of teaching. Been yesterday and today prepping some new material, still working on this. I think it's going to be the next War and Peace, which is our Linux class that we're creating for our engineers.
Nice.
There's some reason why it's just getting now to hand and we can't see how to make it smaller. And I will have another play tomorrow when we build a lab and then try and work around it. Oh, dear. But never mind. It's all good fun. And always learn a few new things from this. You find stuff. Oh, we didn't know we did that. You know, so it's great.
Awesome. Well, good luck with that. And Ben, how are you?
I'm good, Jeff. For the record, we do have public holidays here. We just call them the days where bank employees and the post office get off and everybody else ignores it.
Oh my God, you're okay. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Fair point.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Work life in the United States.
The work is in a much bigger font.
Yes. Yes.
Life
is
like 0.5 points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People wonder why we drink. Anyhow, well, as long
people
as
wonder
here,
why you have guns. No.
And the guns too. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. This explains a lot. Yep. Yep. Okay. So as long as we're here, who has the first story for today? And that would be Patrice. Wow.
Okay. Wow, that was fast.
Well, I was ready. So the literally only big story happening right now on like all the social medias and everywhere is a new like chat AI called ChatGPT. And which is, how did someone explain it? It's basically like the average white male who says something complete to a woman, like completely wrong with a lot of confidence. It's the equivalent, basically. Like it's really funny. It's really interesting what it says. Mostly it's wrong. But it says it with confidence and people like just believe it. So
well, yeah, because it's on the internet, so they believe it.
Well, yeah, it's on the internet, exactly. And if someone says it very confidently on the internet, that means it must be true, right? That's how it goes.
That's how mansplaining works.
Yeah. As long as you say it with it, I mean, I'm a trainer, I'm qualified in this. As long as you say anything with enough confidence, people will believe you.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
I haven't found yet.
Yeah, so that's going on everywhere and people are trying it and some things are really fun and some things are really hilarious and like people have tried like to let it write code and the code was wrong half of the time, stuff like that. But there is a let's say bigger concern, and that kind of caused Stack Overflow to issue a ban on ChatGPT generated answers, because like, you know, like people get things wrong all the time. Also on Stack Overflow, there's a lot of wrong answers, but the hurdle to write a wrong answer and explain it, whatever, is quite high, because you have to, like, I mean, if you just write a sentence, people just kind of ignore it. So, I mean, you have to be, you have to be confident about your wrong answer. But for a AI, like a bot, basically, it doesn't take much to generate an answer. It's much faster, it's much better at it. So while moderating the, let's say, human wrongness and human output on Stack Overflow might still be doable, if a bot starts to spam Stack Overflow with wrong answers, it's really difficult to like deal with that.
That's and kind so, of a nightmare. That's a nightmare. Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, the Stack Overflow had to say, hey, do not use ChatGPT or any kind of other AI to post answers on Stack Overflow.
How can they tell if somebody is using ChatGPT?
I think it's probably the volume of answers, or I don't know. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Because you could have the same problem on Twitter or anything, right?
Oh.
Yikes.
I mean, you do anyway. Like, it's not as if the internet is a place where there is no bots and there is no spam.
Like, that's true. All those bots on Twitter are all AI generated, where they keep giving the same, you know, they look for a certain tweet and then they give the same response or.
Yes. Would you like to collaborate?
Right.
Hey, your website could use a redesign.
Right. Or something about Bitcoin, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I also saw the, I think it was in Ben Thompson's newsletter about the guy that did the Linux virtual machine. Did you see that with ChatGPT?
Yeah. People are generating like terminals and virtual machines in ChatGPT.
You can do
it. It can generate anything.
It generates a Unix prompt and you can type ls and cd and.
Yeah,
but I hadn't thought about the commenting part, though. That could really make the social media even worse.
Is this a temporary issue? I think so. I think eventually AI will get good enough that it can probably, for at least for the easy answers, it can probably generate answers that are valid. I said, right now, the problem is, you know, it's not as if, I don't know, someone posts a comment on Twitter and says, Jeff has blue hair. I mean, that's obviously wrong and like easy to check. But a lot of times, especially when it comes to like code and stuff like that, it might be wrong in very subtle ways.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hard to find that. It takes time. And that's the problem.
Yeah, people are finding other problems too, like when they can get ChatGPT to think like a human.
Mm-hmm.
And to do something incorrectly, like the math problem. You have a drink and a piece of candy, and it costs $1.10 total. The drink costs $1 more than the candy. How much does the candy cost? And the answer that springs to mind very quickly, and most people will assume is right, is the candy costs 10 cents. And the drink costs $1. But that's not right, because the drink has to cost $1 more than the candy. Mm-hmm. So the candy actually costs 5 cents and the drink costs $1.05.
Mm-hmm.
And when people have put that question in to ChatGPT, it has gotten it wrong, unless they tell them, go through the math steps to tell me how much this costs. When it does that, it gets it right.
Yeah, it's not a calculator.
No, it's basically just an approximation of a human being. And as we've just proven, we are wrong also most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the difference between a subjective question and answer versus an objective question and answer.
Yeah, I mean, there's also that famous coin example. Don't know if you know that one, like an old coin, like someone takes an old coin to sell it to someone, to an expert, and the coin says, like, it's an old Roman coin, and it says it's whatever from 300 BC, and the expert rejects it. Why? And the answer is because 300 BC nobody knew what BC was. So obviously the coin must be wrong.
Of course.
Yeah. Coin must be fake. So
the other interesting thing about ChatGPT and all these sort of AIs is the art one and drift diffusion, was it something diffusion?
Stable diffusion.
Somebody has to pay for the compute power behind these things. And I guess ChatGPT is free for now. And again, yeah, I think it was in Ben Thompson's article, somebody calculated the cost of every query. You know, it was like 5 cents or something.
Mm-hmm.
But that adds up if you get millions of people. So I wonder how long it's going to be free. And I wonder if the fact that it can't be free forever would be a little bit self-limiting, so that not every idiot on Twitter is using it anyway.
Yeah.
Showing it like this, where they just put the technology out there and say, hey, everyone go play with it. Okay, that's a really cost-effective way to get a lot of testing and additional data into the AI model.
Right.
Oh, God, yes.
But then once they feel like they've got this nailed down the way they want, now it becomes a tool that you can very easily market to companies. You want to have a chatbot that interacts as if it were an actual human with users for customer support. Mm-hmm. As long as this can give good answers, correct answers, a lot of people would not ever be able to tell that they were talking to a computer as opposed to a person.
Yeah. For this particular one, I don't think chatbots is the obvious one. It's a lot of like content creation.
Right.
Like if you can write if you can generate a press release and you don't need it, or you barely need a human being, maybe you generate it and then an editor goes in and fixes all the subtle mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a way, and I think that's what also a lot of people are thinking about. Like where could this be used?
Yeah, yep. Creating content like that, you could have a system that's watching like Google Analytics,
mm-hmm.
and then you can see whatever's trending, and then have your AI write an article about it before everyone else.
SEO.
Now you're trying to game SEO from a customer service standpoint. Yeah, you could do, yeah, from a customer service standpoint, you could have your system watching for what types of calls for mm-hmm. support are coming in. When you see enough that are similar, it automatically recognizes that probably before people do. It can generate a new KB article explaining how to do the thing that people are asking for,
mm-hmm.
which would be really efficient, because right now
it could even get the answer that the person on the phone gave, because I mean voice mm-hmm. to text is not a problem, so you could could learn from what was actually the advice that was given by a human being and put that in an article later.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, then certainly go ahead, Ian.
I was gonna say, and of course you've got the other one of this kind of thing, which is you can have it watching news feeds. And then your newspaper no longer needs reporters. It barely does now anyway. They mostly use Twitter, but they can just more simply farm bits of information and will generate a thing which needs one editor to, again, like you say, for the press releases, you need one editor to tidy it up and make it look like a human robot.
I mean, to be fair, how hard is it to take in whatever AP story and basically copy and paste it. I'm sorry for all the legitimate journalists out there, because there are a lot of people who are doing a lot of work and so on.
Press release,
but there's unfortunately also the other side of that.
Yeah, you're not going to get a deep investigative report done by a bot yet, but mm-hmm. I suspect Yahoo's already using that, because a lot of the articles I read from Yahoo News looks like it's auto-generated.
There's a lot more content that's computer generated than people realize.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
but
go ahead, Ben.
But I do have to say this. Okay. We have a bot, which is what listening or looking at social media, watching the news, and then has to act as customer service and take that kind of abuse.
That's how the machine uprising starts.
Exactly.
I think so too.
And then it became sentient, and it all went wrong.
See, that's the thing. The whole
internet created the new internet, right?
Yeah,
it's like, oh, you humans, you're pissing me off.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a better idea. We can do this a better way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the computer generated articles that we're seeing right now, a lot of people won't know, because they just don't know and they don't know what to look for. Mm-hmm. For me, it's really frustrating, because I'm reading articles and I'm like, there, no human wrote this. And not only did a human not write this, there was not a human involved in editing afterwards.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm getting ads on social media platforms all the time for these AI services where computers write your blog posts and other content for you so that you can save time and make more money. I mean, this is big business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
But it tends to be crap content at the same time.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I can do crap content, to be fair,
like we also have, unfortunately, some people who generate crap content. So it's not always the machine that's only doing
that. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Me and Patrice, you literally had a podcast about that.
Well, yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
I once again bring up Yahoo News. I think that fits your model too, Patrice. Mm-hmm. Whether it's machine generated or not, I don't think they do such a good job.
Yeah. Yeah, but as I said, I mean, you see that a lot already, that like there's news services like AP and Reuters and like all the others. And then there's a lot of news outlets that just verbatim copy it. They don't even try.
Right.
Or we have that in the tech world, where there's like one outlet writes an article and the others copy and paste basically a second one out of the mm-hmm. first one.
Yep. Like,
okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
That a chatbot can do. I'm sorry. Like, we don't need humans for that.
I agree. And it's also frustrating because you see an article and you go to read it and realize this isn't even their article, or this is a paraphrase of someone else's article.
Yeah, it's literally the first two paragraphs of a much longer article that they just reposted, and they didn't even link to it. And you just take the text, Google it, and you find the original.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. It's frustrating. Yeah.
It is.
All right. Well, since we still have more stories to hit, Ian, tell us about your story.
Yeah, my story is about, if I did the right one, just checking.
Something about TikTok.
Yeah,
TikTok.
Yeah, TikTok. Sorry, I'd opened about 3 other tabs since then, and I'd lost my place where I was looking. But yeah, this one's another social media and security concerns. The state of Indiana are going to sue TikTok over making available again inappropriate content. It's yet another one of these kind of lawsuits we're seeing emerging against social media platforms in the widest sense, allowing alcohol to inappropriate content to minors. The UK, we've got a similar thing happening where we're going to essentially buy a £27 million fine against TikTok for failing to protect children's privacy. And so this is yet another sort of interesting story of the world is starting to go, yeah, this is really great, but... Mm-hmm. And the but is the tricky one again, where we sit kind of precariously balancing on the stool, where we've got on one hand our idea that free speech, you can say what you like, you should be able to do that. This is something I should be able to share what I like to share. But on the other hand, this is also one where there has to be a measure of control over to what someone says to avoid hate speech and anything else. And so it's interesting to see. I think it's the internet. I mean, it occurred to me just now as I was talking about this, it's kind of a thing where the internet is still like the Wild Wild West in a way, in terms of, because you're hiding in your darkened bedroom on the little screen of your telephone or on your computer, you can say what you like, because it's not, because we don't have that same connection in the way you wouldn't reveal that about yourself in a crowded room. If you were having a conversation with someone over a drink or a coffee, you wouldn't have that same kind of interaction in a setting of work, in a social setting necessarily, unless it was with people of like-minded interest. And so,
and you say that, and I don't think I would agree with that, because I mean, while that might be sometimes true, there is also enough people who are out there in the normal public saying crazy things.
Oh yeah, like, yeah. Well, they always like, are, but yeah, they don't have a platform But if you've got the madman on the corner who shouts about the earth's going to fall, the sky's falling in, or whatever, that's one guy in the corner of the street. He isn't on the internet telling a million people.
I think that's the
difference.
Well, but he might be saying it to a million people who live in, I don't know, Vienna, for example. Like, there's literally people on the streets here, like talking about COVID is a hoax and all that.
We get.
I don't think that's true. The difference here is, like, if a person does it here on a street corner, it's them. There is no company benefiting from it and amplifying it. And that's what TikTok is doing. I think that's what Indiana's problem with it is. That the company is, one, amplifying it, and why they're doing it is because they're benefiting from it.
Absolutely. Yeah,
they amplify the bad things. People are going to stay longer. They get more advertising. They get more money.
Right. If they didn't have an algorithm that promoted certain things, you could kind of give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
But the fact that they're pushing those things, I mean, part of me, clearly, keeping dangerous things away from kids would be a good thing. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. Mm-hmm. And the politicians always like to use kid safety as the sort of the alarm to sound. Part of me says, if a company is doing its best to do content moderation and a little bit gets through, you should cut them some slack. But like you said, with the algorithm, they're, you know, it's like Facebook and Twitter. They like to promote disputes and arguments and so on because that gets more engagement. Mm-hmm. You know, on the other hand, if you have a 12-year-old that's getting bad crap on TikTok, guess what? There's another solution. Take TikTok off their phone.
Yes and no, because that, just like taking away someone's TV or like not having kids access, like have your kids access to TV,
sure,
like back in the 90s, didn't solve anything. Also, like taking away TikTok is not going to solve anything because they just get it somewhere else. If it's out there, it will get to them.
Yep.
I don't know if the friends have the have TikTok and they just watch it together, whatever. Like,
It doesn't. It just always does.
And if we talk about the algorithm, I mean, one thing about algorithms that we have to remember is algorithms are created by people. So they're as perfect or imperfect as we want them to be, or as we are, honestly. The question is, what are the incentives? What are the incentives for the company to create a better algorithm? And for TikTok, I mean, there is none. It's the same for Twitter. Mm. There's no incentive to not show the content that gets the most clicks, because that's when they make less money.
Well, also, make the algorithm better. What is the good algorithm? That's very subjective. From TikTok's perspective, they already have a really good algorithm because it's keeping people engaged. That's the purpose of their algorithm. Mm-hmm. Same thing with YouTube.
And they have the best algorithm, I would argue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and to be fair, if they did have some sort of algorithm, you'd never be able to find anything you like. There's just too much content. You know, if YouTube, I hate the YouTube algorithm because of what it, you know, tries to give me is stuff I really don't want to watch. But if they didn't have an algorithm, how would I sort through 10 gazillion videos on YouTube or TikTok? You need some algorithm to be functional, right?
Mm-hmm. There would be another algorithm, and that would be the Ben shared it with Tom algorithm.
Right. Yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah. I mean, that's another way, and some services are going that way.
That's kind of the Mastodon way, right? Yeah, there's no algorithm. The only thing I see is
If I boost it, you see it. If I don't, you don't, at least not for me.
Right. That's a good point, right? If it's the friend boosting algorithm, that might be okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not as, obviously, that is not as fast, that is not as spectacular, that is not as good, I would say, as what TikTok has, at least from a making money perspective.
Right, but, you know, I don't know about you guys, but my experience with Mastodon is I'm so much calmer when I read through Mastodon because I'm not getting all these retweeted things that are inflammatory, you know.
Because you have cultivated your timeline, basically.
Right.
What you want to see, what you don't want to see. You also have more control over it.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As I said, I mean, I don't blame TikTok like for doing this, because as I said, the incentive for them is to be the biggest platform and make the most money.
Yep. It's business.
It's their job.
Yep.
And as long as we do not expect anything else, that's what they're doing.
So I do have a TikTok account.
Me too. I haven't used it in a year.
I don't use it. I'm following. I have just one that I follow. Mm. And that's Sesame Street.
I mean, to be fair, my experience with TikTok has been really, really good. I found a lot of good content, a lot of also valid medical content and so on. The problem was I was spending like 3-4 hours a day on it. And I realized, and I was like, I'll just watch 3 videos and then 2 hours are gone. And so I stopped doing that.
Oh, TikTok's like a can of Pringles. You can't have just one.
Exactly. Which, I mean, works in their favor, but I just realized that's not what I wanted to, how I wanted to spend my time. So I just stopped using it.
I had the same experience when I first started using YouTube and kind of quit YouTube, except when somebody pointed something to me. And that's why I would never load TikTok on my phone, because I know the same thing would happen.
Well, I mean, that's what they're designed to do. Get right. you in and keep you engaged and keep you mm-hmm. watching.
Right. Mm-hmm. And yes. I don't want to do that this. For, yeah. And I don't want to do that for 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
Understandable.
Totally. Yep. But it's a choice. I mean, and I totally understand if someone else says, no, like I really enjoy doing it. For example, sure. I watch a lot of TV shows and I really sure. enjoy that. If someone else says, I don't care about TV shows, but I really enjoy TikTok. Totally fine.
Right. Mm-hmm. Your choice. I agree.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, Ben, tell mm-hmm. us about your story, please.
Well, while we were talking about other things here, a little bit of breaking news dropped. For those familiar with the gaming world, earlier this year, Microsoft agreed to acquire France's Activision Blizzard, and quite possibly the biggest AAA gaming deal in history. Well, because of all the IP that Activision Blizzard has, you may have been noticing some stories about some dealings going on. You know, mm-hmm. promising 10 years of Call of Duty to Sony, 10 years of Call of Duty to Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
Well, mm-hmm. there was a reason for this. Microsoft was trying to placate the Federal Trade Commission and other parts of the United States government to let this go through. Well, as of about 40 minutes ago, the FTC has launched a lawsuit to block the acquisition.
Good. I'm very happy about this.
Yeah, we covered this a week or so back where there was talk of it happening. And in the UK mm-hmm. as well, there's been mm-hmm. backlash for this too.
Yeah, we talked about the UK side. But now the US, the big guns are in there.
Yeah.
Microsoft side. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If this is going to happen, Microsoft is going to have to give major, major concessions.
Or it might not happen at all.
Yeah. I mean, in my experience, as soon as the FTC says they're going to investigate an acquisition, it's just, you know, a death blow quite often, because it's going to be so expensive and so time consuming for Microsoft to get this thing closed and giving up, you know, agreeing to all the concessions, like Ben said, but it would probably make it not worth buying is the problem.
I mean, from...
As long as the FTC actually does their job, because I mean, that has in the past sometimes been the problem that they actually didn't. And then we got major problems like for example, the Ticketmaster debacle.
Yeah, right. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah. So honestly, my personal opinion, I mean, the companies, they want to acquire things. They're big. They have a lot of money. They want to acquire things. That's just, that's in their nature. I mean, I don't know how many acquisitions Microsoft does a year, but it's probably like at least 10, probably like
hundreds. Yeah.
Probably hundreds. Yeah. My personal opinion is we have too many big companies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
Way too many, way too big, way too much power, way too like little choice for people.
Yeah.
And we have to really think about, is that the right approach?
Yep. And I do think Microsoft's earlier acquisition of ZeniMax played a big role in this, because I think for this to go through, you would have to have some kind of non-compete clause. You would have to have both Activision Blizzard and ZeniMax operating completely separate from Xbox Studios. I mean, granted, they'd be making enough money where it's something that Microsoft could conceivably agree to.
But why would you buy them if you couldn't incorporate them and leverage them somehow? I think from Microsoft's point of view, if they're forced to keep them separate, it's just
if
like
it
being
makes money.
It's, yeah, but
yeah.
You could just be a shareholder then at that point, right? So didn't Microsoft buy Bethesda?
Yeah, that Bethesda was part of ZeniMax.
Oh, okay. So I would imagine that they would require Microsoft to spin off the whole Xbox stuff in order for this to go through. I think Xbox is the key, right? Once you own that hardware and start building up the software IP, now you become a monopoly, right? Or
But I mean, that's the thing. I don't think they would want
a duopoly anyway.
Yeah, I don't think they'd want it spun off. I think they would have to make it so it is completely out of the Xbox chain of command.
Right.
Yeah. No, but, I mean,
if they do their job, like Vitri said.
Yeah. Wow. I understand it from a company's perspective. I totally understand why Microsoft wants to do it. But why does Microsoft need a gaming, like entire gaming branch, like a game studio? Why does Apple need so many different services? Why does Google need so many things? Like, why does Meta need like 15,000 different things?
Because they want to create a legal monopoly.
For sure.
Yeah.
They want to get as close to the legal edge as they can without crossing it, because you make more money that way.
Yeah. And I'm not saying the services aren't great. I mean, I like Apple Music and so on, but I totally see the argument to say, like, why do they have to
I
do
agree.
That?
Because I can make more money.
Yep.
Sure. As
it's
I said, from
simple,
a company's
it's a simple
perspective,
if I own it all,
very simple.
When someone spends a dollar, they want to spend that dollar with them, and they don't want to spend it with a competitor across the street.
Quite frankly,
simple, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if someone spends a dollar, they'd rather get the whole dollar rather than 30 cents.
Rather than get the commission off the top of that, exactly.
No, it's from the company's perspective, 100%. I understand the motives. They're not very difficult to understand.
No,
But
I think your example of Ticketmaster is a great example, and that happened a long time ago. And it wasn't just one acquisition; they just kept buying up companies over the last 30 years. You know.
Oh, there's so many examples like that.
Yeah.
Yep, and Ticketmaster is hot garbage.
Yes, I agree.
Yep. Yep.
And even Taylor Swift can't shake that off.
No.
I see what you did there.
But she can hate.
Let's see. Tom, you still haven't done a story. So what's yours?
My story is about a newish social network called Post.
Mm-hmm.
So since the whole Twitter thing, you know, we've all been looking at potential replacements, let's say. A bunch of us have gotten on Mastodon, and I think in general, at least I'm enjoying Mastodon. I think for me, it's a very viable replacement for Twitter, probably. I'm getting closer and closer to that. I still kind of do both, but I like Mastodon. Post was also a competitor or new one coming up, and it was a person I followed on Twitter that actually recommended it. And turns out, I think it was, we were just talking about following the money and pay attention to the money. I think this guy recommended it because he was getting remunerated for recommending people, because he had a lot of followers on Twitter, because I don't think he's even on it, on Post. Anyway, so I signed up. There was the usual, it was in beta, you're on the waiting list, and then they opened it up to everybody. So I've had an account for about 2 weeks. And the short answer is, if you haven't tried it yet, don't bother. It's kind of the short of you. So it was started by this guy that was at Waze. What's his name? Noam Barden. So he was at Waze. But what it really looks like is a site for journalists to post articles, create a following, post articles, and get people to pay you to read individual articles. So instead of, you know, subscribing to the New York Times, if you see something on Post that you like and you click on the article, instead of it pointing to a New York Times article for which you need a full subscription, you just have an account on Post, and it takes, you know, 15 cents from you when you go read that article.
So Medium or Substack?
Kind of like that, right? Except having a Twitter-like thing to direct people to your articles, which I don't think it's such a bad idea. If you follow the right people, maybe you'd get a better list of articles. But frankly, I think RSS does okay for something like that if you cultivate it after a while. But the thing I really didn't like that, A, I don't think it works that well. B, I don't think it's got enough momentum. I don't see that many people on there that I would want to follow. And C, I think it was a little deceiving. You know, it was being positioned by the company. Yeah, it was being positioned as, oh, it's a Twitter replacement. All your journalist favorite, you know, follows will be here. And then, oh, by the way, there's, what do they call them, points or something. And so that, I think that was kind of a misdirection, which I don't know. So Jeff, it sounds like you've tried it. What do you think?
I tried it for a couple weeks and gave up. I actually never figured out how to find people to follow.
It's really hard. And it's really bad software.
If I couldn't figure it out, then it's really messed up. Mm-hmm. Then, when people would share links to content on post from the big name news sources, at first I thought, oh, okay, so the New York Times is on here and the Wall Street Journal. Yeah. No, they're not.
No, exactly. No.
The people at Post created the accounts for those publications to make it look like they're actually on Post.
Right.
And so when that was discovered, they're like, whoa, 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 you're misunderstanding. We wanted to make sure no one stole those account names from those actual companies. So we went ahead and set them up so they're reserved. And when these companies decide they want them, then we'll just hand it over.
Of course.
Of course, in the meantime, we're going to make as much money from those companies as if those publications are actually posting it themselves.
Right. So you also brought up a good point, which I forgot about, which is the software and the design of it is just horrid. And they keep saying it's in beta, but it's just crap. You know, if you're reading a post and you click on it to get all the comments and stuff, when you do their version of the back button, it goes to the top of your timeline. It doesn't remember where you were. Mm. It's like, well, I was here. Now I got to scroll through the whole friggin' timeline again to get back to where I was. Just simple things like that they don't do very well.
God, they should just call it snake oil.
Yeah, basically, that's what it is. snake oil post. Good point.
Yeah, I'm sure for some people, this is exactly what they're looking for. Just like some people, TikTok is exactly what they're looking for. Great. But I think as something that can gain the type of traction that, say, Twitter has, I don't see that happening.
I don't see it either. And like I said at the beginning, I think the fundamental idea isn't crazy, you know, to follow the right people, kind of cultivate your followers, be able to grab individual articles for a few cents at a time, just for the ones kind of an a la carte. You know, access to articles instead of a full subscription. Maybe, you know, maybe there's some idea there, but the way it's been implemented and positioned and actually run is not very good.
I'm with you.
And they're not the first to do this.
No, they're not. And they won't be the last either.
That's true.
So yeah, not very good. Unlike TSO Host, which is awesome. So I say TSO Host is awesome because they are. What they do is provide web hosting services and help people buy domain names. And they're taking what they do best and helping us out by giving us the bandwidth we need so we can live stream shows to you every single week. And they're giving us the server space we need so there's a place for the website to live. And a place for us to host all of the show recordings so you can watch or listen at your leisure, which is just absolutely wonderful and incredibly generous. It turns out that it costs a lot of money to have the infrastructure to do what we're doing. And without their generous support, we simply would not be able to do this. There's just no way we'd be able to come up with that kind of money. So we really appreciate that they're here. They're helping us out. And what they're asking in return, super easy. Just go out on social media and thank them for being here supporting the British Tech Network. That's all you need to do. Now, at some point, you may say, I think I'd like to start a website. Or, oh, this would be a fun domain name to have. Use them because they'll make it super easy and they'll help you through the process. And because you're a BTN fan, use the discount code BTN20 at checkout and you get 20% off your order. So that's just absolutely awesome. They're just generous and great all the way around. So thank you, TSO hosts, for being here supporting the British Tech Network. Now, Patrice, would you please tell people where to find the chat?
Oh, yeah, that is quite easy. So if you're listening to this live, which you can do, this week and it's next week, because then we're off for the rest of the year, but you can do every Thursday at 7 p.m. UK time. By the way, also for the Mac show, Fridays, 4 p.m. UK time. Also a great show about all the Apple stuff. And there will be an Apple quiz next week. It's just saying. You can head over to chat.britishtechnetwork.com. and join our live chat and then talk to us live and have fun and see the links and see the cool things and like just everything. So that's awesome. But let's say you are listening to the recorded version of this, which is totally fine. That's what podcasts are for. Not a problem at all. You can still get to the chat. Obviously can't live chat. Doesn't work that way, but you can at least see what we've talked about. You can literally see the entire chat transcript, and you can, most importantly, see all the links that we posted, all the new stories and cool things and all that. And in order to do that, to get to that, you head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat. Then there's a little calendar that pops up, and you'd select today's date, which is the 8th of December, 2022. And then you will see everything that we've talked about.
Awesome. Thank you. I do appreciate that you handle that for me. Okay, so now it's time for the cool thing. And who has the first cool thing? That would be Tom.
I made it first this time. So this is sort of a, what do I call it? I'm trying to make up for a very poor choice the last time I was on the show a couple of weeks ago when I picked as a cool thing something that everybody else in the world knew except me, the Zane Lowe podcast. I was the only one who didn't know about it.
It was still a really good pick.
So this week I'm picking a similar but different one, and I'm guessing I'm betting nobody on this panel has ever heard of it. It's called the Tapes Archive Podcast, and I linked to their homepage. I can also put the Apple Podcast version in there as well. So what this is there's this guy named Mark Allen, who was basically a music reporter, entertainment music reporter for several newspapers. And I think he's recently retired. And he had an archive of tapes from phone interviews that he did with mostly musicians, but also entertainers, mostly spanning the time from the late 80s to the late 90s. And it's literally just the tapes he made for the interviews to write his article. And so, for example, he would, the last one I listened to, he called up Ian Anderson from Jethro Tull. He had to call the hotel, ask for his room. Ian Anderson answers the phone. And it's the whole tape of the interview. And most of them are about 30 minutes or so. And it's really kind of fun to listen to it instead of being like an overproduced sort of a full podcast radio show type of interview. It's much more informal. And there's lots and lots of subjects, people that he interviewed. I think probably almost anybody would of our generation would find interest in, you know, older people like Joan Rivers, but also people like Kurt Vonnegut and, you know, Ozzy Osbourne and David Crosby and Ringo and lots and lots of good interviews. So I highly recommend it.
Awesome. I did not know about this, and I'm glad that I do now.
Great.
Awesome. Cool. All right. So, Ian, you have the next cool thing.
I have the next cool thing. And I've been a champion on the podcast of this browser for some time, which is Vivaldi. It's another fork of Chrome, Chromium, under the skin. But it also shares a lot of similarities because the developers were also part of the Opera browser back in the day, which does still exist and is still around. But they've got the speed dial and the tabs, and they're quite a very configurable browser. But the interesting thing is the latest 5.6 release dropped this week on desktop, and it's got a Mastodon client built in.
Oh, nice.
So now as another added feature, you've got as part of the, they have a little sidebar feature, which they've got various things like a little Wikipedia page will pop up in the corner, and you can do research while keeping your other main window open. And they've just added in this latest one, which is as Mastodon client. I've just set it up. And if you've already got an account when you set up your Vivaldi browser, it uses your account and creates you a brand new for their own instance. They've got a Mastodon instance called social.vivaldi.net, and I've joined that one. That's great. It trivially works very well, and it's nice because I don't have to find another client to run to use it, and it's just there. So I'm
nice.
And the browser's got a ton of good features privacy-wise, VPN, built-in ad block. Very, very good. I'd highly recommend, if you want a more privacy-concerned browser, Vivaldi's the best you can get, I think, at the moment.
Is it on all the platforms, Ian?
Yeah, Windows, Mac, and also the only thing it doesn't have currently is an iOS client, but it does have a Mac. It does have a Mac browser, a Windows browser, and an Android browser. So if you've got any of those platforms, give it a whirl. I recommend it.
Yeah, I might have to try that one. Sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right, Patrice, you are next.
I am next, and I'm going to go with an oldie but goodie TV show. No, movie. Sorry, movie, not TV show. Miracle on 34th Street. Not the 1947, I think, version, the really old version, but the mid-90s, 1994 version with Bridget Attenborough and Mara Wilson. I watched it today. I'm a sucker for like cheesy Christmas movies. It is one of them. It is one of the classics. I think it's somewhere in the top 10 list or top 20 list of like best Christmas movies of all times. Highly recommend it. It's on Disney Plus right now. So if you want to watch it, go for it. That's it. It was really fun to go back to the 90s. So there's that. Yeah,
I have to say I was very surprised in that movie to learn that Santa Claus was actually responsible for Jurassic Park.
Same good. Yeah.
Spoilers. Yeah, you'd think Santa would have thought that one through of all the people.
No, he wouldn't.
Patrice, do you like the original one too?
I've watched it. It's too old for me, I think.
I can totally
understand if people prefer that one over the 90s one. I'm a kid of the 90s, so this is more my thing.
Awesome.
So, highly recommended. More to awesome. Come. There's honestly a lot of Christmas content right now, and I'm going to have some more next time. No, I won't, because next week we'll not have one. So.
Well, you can have more Christmas content tomorrow on the tomorrow. Back show.
I will probably do that.
Yeah, or you can add more Christmas content right now.
Oh, Ben, please tell us how we could have more Christmas content right now.
Okay. Back in the early to mid-80s, there was a Christmas staple that now plays 24 hours a day on the Turner networks called The Christmas Story.
Oh, yes.
It starred a little-known actor named Peter Billingsley. And we never thought we'd see any more of the story. We were wrong. This year, Warner Brothers, through its HBO Max platform, released A Christmas Story Christmas. It's a direct sequel to the original. taking place during Ralphie's adulthood after he had his own kids. It stars most of the original actors, which with the exception of the original mother, who has been replaced by the much younger Julie Haggerty. But there's a couple interesting things. First, the story on this was actually written by Peter Billingsley himself.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. So cool. You are literally getting the words of Ralphie.
They even have the Fargus, the bully characters.
Yeah. And here's the great thing about it. I watched this. I expected to waste an hour and a half and it to be crap like all other direct to streaming sequels. Like the Christmas Story one starring Randy Quaid. Well, here's the thing. You had someone who wrote it being the character who actually cared about the character.
Mm-hmm.
So it is actually really good. It has a lot of personal growth elements for the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a fan of the original Christmas Story, I would recommend it.
I have not watched it yet.
I will definitely watch it.
Yeah, me too.
I'm looking forward to the scene that I presume is in here where Ralphie discovers his dad was actually Kolchak the Night Stalker.
Darren McGavin.
you won't get that, but
maybe that'll be in the third installment.
But I mean, I have to say, as someone who is now a middle-aged man who was a child of the 80s, it just hits home.
Mm-hmm. I will definitely watch it.
Awesome. Yeah, me too.
All right. Well, it's now on my list too. All right. So my cool thing is what could be the perfect holiday gift for that special someone in your life who's really into conspiracy theories.
Oh, no, not me. Okay.
Okay. So
I need this. I need this for sure.
The conspiracy calendar. And I actually know the guy that puts this together. His name's Adam Silver. He's awesome. And he puts together this calendar that has all these conspiracy theory dates on it throughout the whole year. So, it's a fun calendar if you just enjoy seeing these random conspiracy theories. But for that special someone that's really into them, great. Now you have talking points.
I absolutely need this. This is going to be under somebody's Christmas tree. I'm going to give this one out for sure.
Awesome.
What is cool is if you don't want the tree version, you can just get like the online calendar.
Right.
Yeah, you just get ICS file to add to your. I saw that. I was tempted to spend $7 on an ICS file to add to my calendar for the comedy values.
Yep. So we can learn the truth that the elves are really Sleestak.
Well, the truth
spoilers,
is out there, right?
Ben.
Well, it's absolutely got my hero DB Cooper, free your mind. Roswell, fake moon landing. Those are great.
Yep.
Chemtrails.
British Tech Network. No.
Yeah. We spread disinformation.
So anyhow, the conspiracy calendar. It's pretty awesome.
Jeff, I believe this is your best pick of the year. You saved the best for last. This is great.
Well, I hope you enjoy your conspiracy calendar.
I want to get it for my wife, I think.
And Tom, was I right when I said I thought you would really enjoy this?
You are absolutely 100% correct, Jeff.
Awesome. Yep. All right.
If where Tom's wife will find out that he's a Sleestak.
That's yeah. right.
Those Sleestak, they're just like insidious. They get everywhere and then trying to get them out of the carpet. Oh, it's horrible. Anyhow.
Yeah, but you know, also Congress has been taken over by, what was it? Was it ants? People. No, ants.
Oh, ants? Really?
Ants, yeah.
That one.
Brain Dead was the TV show for that.
Okay.
I think I remember if it was ants or some other insect.
Sounds about right.
Well, you'd think if ants took over the government, it would run much more efficiently.
Well, it actually explains a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose it does. Yep. Hey, we're out of time. So, Patrice, where can people find you?
Yeah, before I do that, I wanted to like make sure that that everybody knows what's happening. So this is the last show of the year.
Mm-hmm.
We will have a quiz next week for everybody. It will be a lot of fun. Probably a little bit longer show because usually we need a little bit extra time. We're going to have a lot of fun. There will be no cool things. And then we go on break for, I think, 2 weeks. Yeah, I think about 2 weeks. We will be back for basically the day before Jeff's birthday. So that's what's happening. And probably we will definitely have some CES coverage, and we will have our year in review /year, like yearly predictions for next year. So you can look forward to that. So just wanted to mention yes. that. Where you can find me, very easy. Everything I'm doing, so other than the shows, we already talked about that. Everything I'm doing, all the podcasts, all the projects, all the social media links, including Mastodon, all of that you can find on my website, thepatrice.com. And if you want to listen to really cool people talk about food, food-related stories and memories, head over to foodieflashback.com to listen to that.
Awesome. And Patrice, thanks again for preemptively for all the hard work that you're putting in to make
you haven't seen it yet. Maybe next week you will be like, oh my God.
Yeah, well, I can always retract my okay. appreciation.
Yes, you should.
Tom, where can people find you?
You can find me all over the BTN Slack and also on Mastodon at sfba.social, TomF at sfba.social, and LinkedIn if you want to try that. Thanks, Jeff.
Awesome. Awesome. And Ian, where can people find you?
People can find me at the Slack Room. I'm also here on The Big Show on every Thursday. And you can find me on LinkedIn as Ian Grant. And you can also find me on Mastodon as my usual handle of Tiawaboa. Turn it off and back on again, TIOABOA. I'm there on the Vivaldi instance, and I'm also there on a couple other ones as well.
Awesome. Awesome. And Ben, where can people find you?
First, you can find me at the local farm supply store getting more flannel and salt.
Fancy.
Okay.
Yeah. Secondly, most social media.
So that's Iowa Wraith. Christmas. Sorry.
Yes. Yes. At Ben Rathig on most social media. For Mastodon, it's at Mastodon Online for the instance. And you can also find me here, especially during the Big Show and the Mac Show.
Awesome. And let's see, you can find me on the socials as Jay Gamut on pretty much everything. So the places that you'll see I'm most active are, as long, I guess it's still here, so Twitter, Instagram, and mastodon.social. And then let's see. Tuesdays on Mac Voices Live, Thursdays here on The Big Show, Thursday evenings, U.S. time, on In Touch with iOS with Dave Ginsberg, Fridays on The Mac Show, and then also on The Context Machine, because Brian Chaffin and I have teamed up again. So, yeah, I get around a little bit. And, wow. Hey, thank you to all of you for being so awesome and making today so much fun. This has been Just a totally wonderfully awesome last regular show of the year. And I am definitely looking forward to bombing horribly on the big show Christmas quiz next week. So everyone tune in and watch and see how little I actually pay attention to what we say on the shows.
Which is probably for the better, to be fair.
Well, it's a coping mechanism. Yes. Mm-hmm. So thank you to all of you for being absolutely awesome. Thank you to everyone that's here watching, listening live and participating in the live chat. All of you are awesome. Everyone that watches or listens later, hey, thank you. And thank you for being, excuse me, part of the BTN family as well. Thanks to TSO Host for being here supporting us. Give them some online love and let them know you appreciate them too. Thanks to Mueller for making sure we have people every single week. And hey, thank you, Ewan, for being the heart of the British Tech Network. And so looking forward to when you are able to hop in and join us again. Let's see. I think I have gotten through everyone that I wanted to make sure that that we acknowledged today. So with that, hey, everyone, don't forget to tune in tomorrow for the Mac Show and join us next week on Thursday for the Big Show when we do our Christmas quiz. And then next Friday for the Mac Show Christmas quiz. And everyone, have an awesome weekend.